From 2820 Radio in Philadelphia, it's The Build. Conversations with entrepreneurs and innovators about their dreams, their triumphs, and their challenges.
Small. It's the opposite of what most businesses strive to become. Usually, when you start a company, you try to figure out how to get as big as you can, as fast as you can. However, in an era where leaders like Paul Graham advise startups to do things that don't scale, hockey stick growth isn't always the right goal to chase. In fact, according to author and consultant Grace Rollins, the deeper connections you make with individuals along the way will define how sustainable your company can become and whether you're likely to survive over the long haul. It's the story of Grow Small Consulting, coming up next on The Build.
The Build is made possible with support from 2820 Press, providing business consulting and content strategy services to customer-obsessed companies nationwide. More information at 2820press.com.
I'm Joe Taylor Jr. This is The Build. Welcome today to Race Rollins from Grow Small Analytics.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. I appreciate the opportunity.
It's a nice day here in our beautiful corner office here at the Curtis in Philadelphia. And I want to talk to you today about what you've been doing with clients lately is looking at the intersection of marketing and financial insight. So for folks who are fairly new to running their business, what are the numbers that they really need to look at? What are the analytics that you help your clients measure and track?
Absolutely. Great question. I think at Grow Small Analytics, our mission is really to improve the speed and the quality of the world's decision making. So we really try to empower business owners to just decide on where to go based on their Google Analytics, based on their financial numbers, based on their qualitative data and their quantitative data. We look at that and we create dashboards to help them take that pivotal next step. So we really drive the decisions. More specifically, it really depends on the industry. So if you look at some of our restaurant clients, for them, it's a cost per plate that they really have to know. We look at covers. For some of our, you know, we have a retail client. We really look at sales per day across all of his categories. We look at where people are coming in from certain channels. So it really depends, Joe, on a lot of the industry, where the entrepreneur has strengths internally with his team and where we can come in and augment.
So walk me through, let's say that I am a restaurateur and I deal a lot in the physical world. What is it that I have to watch for that decision to go from the online space to actually a patron showing up at one of my tables?
Great question. I think one of the hardest business, in my opinion, to run is a restaurant because you have inventory, you have the service component, you have spoilage, you have a lot of different things going on, and then you have what is called dynamic pricing, which you buy a tomato today for one price, next month it's a different, and that affects that cost per plate. So with restaurants particularly, with all businesses, I believe in 100% data granularity. And by that, I mean, I think we should be tracking everything that we possibly can. Even if today we don't have an immediate use for it, it's better, the best practice is to track it, right? So we're tracking all of your purchases by vendor. We're tracking all of your purchases by, you know, when you're actually doing it. We're tracking all of your sales by table, day, time, who the waiters are. And we're really looking at the business and trying to quantify every single step in the process. And that's the first step always with any business from a restaurant or a consulting firm that doesn't have any inventory, is just having the discipline to count for everything.
So for companies, especially again in restaurants, food service, folks that have been traditionally mom and pop that eventually scale up to small chains even, how do you onboard a program of analytics? Where do you start to begin to actually track that data and measure things?
Absolutely. Great question. So it all starts with the data assets that they have currently. Most restaurants are going to have a really legit POS system, right? They're going to be able to track with OpenTable. They're going to have sales and all the POS right there. They're going to have really strong purchasing. Where they tend to mess up, though, is at the cost per plate level. So that's where I really start with most mom and pop businesses. I look at this sort of in three stages of the evolution of a business, right? Where first you have the entrepreneur, but then the entrepreneur has to become a manager and really put in strong processes across all of the functions at the business. And then that manager has to evolve into what you call an executive that can scale those processes, right? So for coming into a new client, they have good food, they have certain data assets. We really try to build those processes around, can we calculate the cost of every single plate? What that requires, Joe, is two things. It requires a recipe that is so specific, almost like the world's largest restaurant, like McDonald's. Every single thing is measured down to a science. So literally, you can walk in off the street, learn the process, nothing stuck in the chef's head, and anybody can really repeat the steps. And what that does, if you have that scalable, repeatable process, you can track it. You can quantify it. You can say, okay, I need the French fries at this temperature. And that gives us the ability to calculate variance, to record error, to see which employees have the most return rates. And it just gives us a whole lot of things. So just to recap, you first look at the data assets the company has currently, and then you try to take those and spread them across all the business functions, build documented processes that anybody can follow, and then we sort of build the analytics from there. We capture everything.
So some of what I hear you saying goes back to authors that I've read, like Michael Gerber with the E-Myth, the idea that for you to get a business to scale, you have to figure out a way to replicate yourself. If you're a creative professional, if you're a chef or someone that's figured something out, you have to teach that craft to other people. How do you balance the need to manage all of these numbers and build these systems and recipes with the thought that sometimes entrepreneurs get scared that doing this is going to lose a little of the soul of the business? How do you actually scale in such a way that you don't lose sight of what makes your business special in the first place?
Yeah, it's an important question. I think for all entrepreneurs, for every person, we only have 168 hours in a week. You cannot buy any more time. That's all you have. So if your desire is just to really build a lifestyle business where all the recipes are in your head and you can really touch every customer, look, that's fine. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to build a business that sort of is independent and outlasts you, you have to build scale in from day one. Part of the ways that you scale without losing your soul is really to have what I call the five key points of any business. Everybody in a business has to understand what the mission of the company is. Why does this company exist, right? So if I go down to the head chef or to the waiter, each one of those individuals should give me the exact same answer because that scales. The next thing after you have your mission, what you want to have next are your metrics. What are the metrics for my particular job, right, that I have to get right every single time in order to preserve the mission and to really execute my job to the fullest ability? We graduate on to values. What does the company value? What's the culture that the company really wants to have? And so we had the mission, we had the metrics, we had the values, we had the culture, and those I'll leave you with those four. Those are the key 4 points that I would say that you have to nail down in order to scale and grow bigger without losing the essence of what the entrepreneur was trying to accomplish on day one.
How do you quantify things like whether a team member is fulfilling the mission of the business? Are there ways that you can figure out that someone is scoring well or not scoring well outside of the context of something like an annual review?
Absolutely. I think that one of the best practices at any level is that every single employee, using our restaurant example, should have 1 to 3 metrics that they're using every single day to say either I had a productive, efficient day or I dropped the ball. And so with a restaurant, you look at one of the most important things for a restaurant is the amount or percentage of tables served that order drinks. Because drinks is a high margin item, where the plate, the main course meal, is a lower margin, and then you get higher on the dessert. So one of the key metrics that they can have is what percentage of your tables are ordering drinks and are ordering desserts. So if you have 25 tables and you know that you hit 23 of them ordering drinks sort of repeatedly and ordering desserts, you should walk away away feeling like, yeah, I had a hell of a day today. Another thing is turnover. So one of the key things in restaurants are covers. You have to flip those tables, meaning you have to be diligent. You have to attend to that table, but you eventually have to move them out to get the next person in to roll. So I think with every business that I see that's successful, everyone can define what are the three things that I can control that I need to focus on in order for the company to be successful. And if I do this, we are executing and we are really executing our mission to the fullest extent. But everybody has to have their personal metrics for their job at their level.
And so at that level, you have to find ways to get individual employees to buy in to the mission as expressed through metrics, as opposed to just a credo or a set of values. So what are the things that you find yourself doing with clients to coach them through a transition where they may have previously been just flying by their gut instinct, or they're feeling like, this is how I've done it for years, or this is how I think people in my industry do it? How do you overcome the resistance to putting those metrics in place?
Great. I mean, we live in what you call the information age, where we live in a time where benchmarks are readily available, where you can benchmark your business, your restaurant against a publicly traded company and really look at the ratios, like what's my gross profit margin versus what's yours, or how much are you spending on cost of goods sold? And you can really just use that to give yourself a scorecard. Where I try to help clients get to the point is point of objectivity. Like, what's our objective? What's the measure? Using our sort of lean startup, let's define success or failure. Right? Let's define that now before we take that next step, before we launch that campaign, before we open our business the next day. What are we expecting to do? And if we fall short of that expectation, why? What did we learn about the market and the customer? What did we learn about ourselves and our team? So what did we learn about the trends of the future? And what did we learn about our sort of organizational culture? So we have this sort of failure process that we're constantly looking and seeing where ways to improve. So the key is to define success and have an executable plan that we can review postpartum to see if we succeeded or failure, and just cutting right to the chase and say, okay, this is what we need to do next time in order to do better, and sort of make some small tweaks.
One thing I hear a lot, especially within the startup community, is this concept of making your failure survivable. So we hear often, fail fast, move fast and break things. And I think there's a little bit of entrepreneurial generational shift here. But a couple generations ago, failure meant your business just fell apart and that was it. You were done. Couldn't survive it. But when I hear failure now, I think in terms more of, in agile programming, for instance, there are things called sprints, really small, measurable amounts of time where you can say, we're going to try a thing for 2 weeks or 1 month. We're going to see what happens. And if we fail, it doesn't mean that everyone's getting fired, everyone's losing their job. It means that we're going to try something different. So how do you actually help clients get through this idea that failure just means a measurement over a period of time?
Absolutely. Seth Godin once said in one of his books or online, he said that he who fails the most eventually will win, right? So we're not talking about catastrophic failure. We're not talking about taking a risk so great that you eventually put your business at risk. But we're talking about doing things, or having the mindset at least, to step outside of your comfort zone, try new products, try new approaches, try new technologies that hopefully will help you win or achieve some sort of competitive advantage or some degree of success in whatever it is that you're doing. But you have to be realistic about the risks that you're taking. You have to quantify success and failure. And if you do fail, you have to have a process to analyze it to improve. A lot of times people just fail. They just really don't do the rigorous analysis as to why they failed, why they sort of miscalculated things. They don't have the accountability for themselves to really improve that next step. So you look at a lot of the new movements like growth hacker marketing, which is really just launching a smaller campaign. You just reduce it down to the least common denominator, and you just try things and you see what works, and then you sort of feed the beast that's working, and then you pivot as fast as possible if you feel like it's not something that you're going to reach your desired goal.
So we talked a lot about the restaurant industry because it's an easy example to look at, but you're actually working with folks across a variety of fields. How do you find yourself taking benchmarks or best practices from one industry, one silo, into another? Tell me about a client that maybe you surprised by showing them a way that they could learn something new about their industry from someplace they would never have looked.
Absolutely. I always start with a website called KPI Library, which is Key Performance Indicator Library. And basically, they will give you hundreds of KPIs across whatever industry that you need. So we always start there. Here's a smorgasbord of KPIs that we can choose from. And then I look at what are the strengths and weaknesses of the actual business, because not every business is going to be able to have a really fast table cover. So you look at a restaurant like Honey Grow, which has the fast casual style. Fast casual was built to move the queue as fast as possible. Very different than the Del Frisco's, right? That really competes on margins and sort of high-end drinks, price per table and things like that. So it really depends on the brand. It really depends on the style. So I always do sort of an interview, if you will, sort of an audit of what the company is able to do. I look at the KPIs and the metrics that are available across all the industries, and I really pick 3 to 5 that I think they can have a lot of success in, and I push them in that direction. So give you a case in point. One of our clients is named Just Mike the Poet. He's a poet that has written 4 books, and he sells a lot on Amazon. He goes on 26 city tours every year. And one of the things that he was really excelling at was social media. It's something that he has a lot of strengths in, and he knows how to create content and really push it and engage with customers. But he was, when you look at his Google Analytics, he really wasn't bringing in a lot from paid advertising, right? A lot from email or a lot from his just directly logging into the site. Most of his traffic was coming in from the social media, which is fine. But we just want to see if we can lift overall sales by running small tests to in a paid advertising stage, and we saw a big lift. And then we sort of doubled down on the angles that were working and pivoted and changed some other things that weren't. But it's really seeing, okay, if the goal is to increase sales and we are getting 80-90% from social media based on our Google Analytics and our other sources are not performing as well, let's not focus too much on our strengths. Let's see if we can increase the overall pie by focusing on some areas where we're not performing as well.
And so peel this back a little bit for folks that might be new to some of the language. When we talk about Google Analytics, explain that tool to folks who haven't heard of it.
All right. So Google Analytics is a tool that allows you to track users to your website, e-commerce sales. It tracks demographics. It's really cool. They have geographics and psychographics so that you can really understand who is coming to my site, when, through which channels. Are they coming on the desktop? Are they coming on mobile? Are they coming on tablets? Do they come from the United States or Russia? Which languages do they speak? And Google has a tremendous amount of penetration. Almost everybody has a Gmail accounts. And the moment you log into your Gmail, Google's able to really give website owners a sight into the psyche of their customers. So they have 2 things that I really love. They have this thing called affinity categories. And affinity categories really tell users, the people that come to your site, if I had to categorize them in 1 word, here's what I would call them. So they'll tell you, okay, I would categorize your site users as TV junkies or political junkies, movie lovers. And with that data, you can really build certain kind of content to really appease that audience because you know what they like. Another really cool psychographic that they have or data point that they have is something called in-market segments. And in in-market segments, Google Analytics literally tells you your customers are in the market for these services. And that really helps you sort of understand what they're buying. And if you don't sell those products, you can definitely advertise your product or service on the website where they go.
And this is not necessarily Google just being benevolent for the sake of it. Their goal is to try and inspire you to buy more ads on their network, but they found that it's a really interesting way to get you to be interested in these results and maybe buy some more from them. But this is something that's free. Anybody can sign up for it. The challenge is really reading those tea leaves and understanding what the numbers really mean.
Just like anything else, I think the world is overwhelmed with the amount of tools. We are inundated with data. We can capture pretty much anything, but what we're looking for is insight. You know, after we collect all this information, what does it mean? What's our next step? What's our decision? And that's where the value at GrowSmall Analytics, that's what we're trying to do. It's not really about the tool. There's Google Analytics, there's Tableau, Excel, you have ClickView, so many different tools, but it's few and far between a business owner or entrepreneur really has his key dashboards daily that he can really keep the financial pulse of his business and really say, okay, this is what we're going to do next based on the numbers. And that's what we're trying to deliver.
And I think you bring up a great point that leads to my next question. So the distinction between a daily dashboard or a real-time data stream versus what many large company executives are used to, which is maybe a monthly report or a quarterly deck or something like that. What advantage does a business owner have when they have access to information that's in real time? Can they meaningfully make changes in the business, or is that information too much of a fire hose?
No, absolutely. I think it's essential in today's competitive environment to have daily numbers that are shot to you in email format that are dynamic, not static. So having a static PDF report of sales, sending it to my proverbial restaurant, just using that as our hypothetical. If I send a report to my restaurant owner that says, okay, sales for yesterday were $5,000. I sent it to him with a nice little write-up in a PDF file. That's basic, and that's really not really adding a tremendous amount of value. What adds value is that if he receives that email on a dynamic report, and he's able to say, okay, I know my total sales were $5,000, but let me drill down a little bit and see what products those were, what's slow moving inventory, what's really catching, how many people are ordering drinks, what's my margin, you know, and really understand when sales are coming so that you can staff properly, so that you know when to order. You look at the world's best companies, I mean Walmart, as big as Walmart is, one of the things that people don't know is Walmart does not have warehouses, right? So they do cross docking. The moment something sold, you know, it's coming from their supplier's warehouse, and it's delivered on that truck. So you very rarely will walk into a Walmart and find things off the shelf. That's all real-time analytics happening so fast. And what they're able to do by being able to make decisions fast is eliminate the warehouse and the storage, which will be a huge cost center just so they can deliver to you everyday low prices. It's really amazing.
But it's the idea that this was data, this business intelligence data layer that 10 years ago was really only available to companies that were the size of Walmart. But these are tools that you can actually put in place even at the small business level.
Yes.
And that's because we've got access to things like smartphones and tablets and the ability to track, hey, I started the shift with 10 tomatoes, now I have 2. I better take that tomato salad off the menu for tomorrow if I can't get more. Or I better buy 20 tomatoes tomorrow because we're selling a lot of those.
That's it. And a lot of these programs sit on Amazon Web Services, which has greatly reduced the cost of storage down to pennies. So you're able to keep large troves of data, huge applications running in the cloud. And so you don't miss a beat. Those are one of those pivotal things that change how business gets done. You mentioned the iPhone, just to be able to deliver a dynamic report that the executive can engage with. Yeah, that wasn't available a couple years ago.
So let's shift gears a little bit because I want to learn more about how you built your business. I would imagine that you're using a lot of the same tools and techniques. This, in software development, we call this dog fooding, right? So you get to kind of eat your own cooking first to see if it's going to work for you before you try it out on a client. Tell me a little bit how you decided to open up your own practice and start attracting clients that you wanted to work with.
Absolutely. I come from a very entrepreneurial family. So me going to college, I always wanted to start a job instead of look for one. So I really came with that perspective and that mentality. I learned it from my dad. So when I went to Temple University and I took a course, accounting course. And Joe, when I tell you the lights sort of everything just clicked for me in accounting 101, I sort of got it. I understood the business, I understood where the value was. And so what I did was I got a QuickBooks Pro certification and I started pitching my bookkeeping business to a couple small clients. The thing that I learned initially was with accounting, accounting had become a commodity at the time. Accounting was one of those things that you can get done on every corner. So it wasn't a thing that I could highly differentiate. So what I did was I had to use accounting, but then offer another service to help businesses understand in real time what was happening. Because even though the books were tight, a lot of times they weren't using the reports to run the business. And that to me just seems strange. But a lot of business owners were really running their business from checking the cash in the bank account, just an eyes on view, and really sort of a familiarity with the operation, but they weren't really using all the tools at their disposal. And so what I did was I really tried to beef up on the data visualization side, dynamic reports, got into Tableau, and then moved to a real-time arrangement where I can just deliver real-time dynamic reports, accounting and otherwise, to business owners to help them make that next decision.
So coming back to the scaling conversation, it's no longer just you. You have folks working with you. How do you find the talent to bring into your organization that are going to be able to deliver at the same level that you would deliver in front of a client?
Good question. I read a book a couple years ago called Business Model Generation by Alex Osterwalt, and he really broke a business down into 9 sections, right? You're starting with your products and services, and basically what is it that you're going to offer to the market, right? And we decided that I was going to do 2 things, accounting and data analytics and data visualization. I grouped that second one into 2. I got out of CRM, which was something that I tried to do, but really couldn't get competitive advantage in the market doing it. But when I really focus on these 2 products, I said, these are the skills that I want to train, that I want to build, that I want to master so that I can continuously offer them to my clients. So I really hire for accountants. I hire CPAs, and then I hire and teach those CPAs how to go beyond the financial accounting, right, and more into the managerial accounting side. So I teach them how to not only produce the report, but really look at what that report means, and not only what it means, but how can we show an insight or explain this story or this information in the most compelling way as possible. And that's what we use Tableau and Google Analytics for, to really build. So I usually hire people from accounting backgrounds and then sort of shift them into sort of what you call data storytellers and teach them the visualization tools. That's my process.
And so you kind of break the usual mold of accountants. You know, every accountant that I have worked with will just kind of disappear down a rabbit hole during tax season and then they come up for air. You are building a team that's actually helping folks execute decisions quarter to quarter, month to month, week to week. What are some of the things that you've learned from building out a team and being able to grow your own business?
I think for me is really having everybody understand the mission of the company. I think that's super critical. And if you took me out of the room and called up each one of my employees, they will give you the same exact answer. Our goal is to improve the speed and the quality of decision making. So let's break that down. So speed. Everything I try to do is in real time. I want to get that information to the entrepreneur as fast as possible. So we're trying to make that journal entry. We're trying to build that insight as fast as possible. And we're trying to improve the quality of decision making. Whereas we're really left brain oriented as a group. We really want to dig deep into the numbers, find the story, extrapolate that story and show it. Not just to present some pretty picture, but I always ask, okay, what are we going to try to get them to do? And unless we can answer that question, then it's really lipstick on the pig. It's really a nice report that they'll look at and say, ah, cool, but it doesn't really provoke any next step action. So I think with everybody centered around that unifying mission, I can always know that my employees are going to look and try to solve the problem as I would. So that's number one. And then number two, just having certain values in the company. I learned this from Zappos. They publicize their values. If you have your values, LinkedIn is another company that publicizes their values. You can hire for that. You can reward those values when you see them. In our business, I love learning. I try to read a book a week. I think it's a huge competitive advantage just to know more. We sell knowledge. So if our skills are lacking, or if we, most people graduate from college and never read another book, you know, so I really try to encourage my team to read as much as possible, because you might read some article or learn something that completely changes the trajectory of the business. We are DDD, data drives decisions. So that's another value that we have. So it's not the highest paid person in the company who's going to win the argument, but who can take the data asset, take the data resource, and make that a compelling case to go forward. We really try to be as entrepreneurial as possible. I try to reward people for training and learning and trying new things. So I think if you're getting me, I think if we have a clear mission with values that everybody in the company understands, you can really rally the troops and keep everybody on the same page as you try to grow and scale your company without losing people along the way.
So tell me a little bit about how new clients discover you. This seems like something that could be fairly abstract for your typical small business owner. So how do they even discover that looking into their analytics is something they even need to investigate?
A couple sort of new client acquisition strategies. The first is, you think of a traditional accounting. They do taxes, they do payroll. Two very commodity-based services, not a lot of value add. They're very administrative and they're cheap to do. So I usually give those away for free. Those are things that gets the foot into the door. These are ways that I can pivot against or challenge ADP or Paychex or Intuit, and really just offer a service that really doesn't cost me too much to administer for free. So that gets me in the door. Another thing that we're trying to do is write a lot more and produce a lot of content. In this world, Gary Vee said, you give them the jab, 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 right hook. You help, 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 and then you go in for the ass. And you really have to produce meaningful, helpful content to help clients understand where they're weak. And then because you've helped them, they'll come out, reach out to you. In 2013, I wrote a book called Good Businesses Grow Small. And basically what that means is just developing an infrastructure that allows you to do business one-on-one with customers, right? So having the data assets in place where you know who new customers are, how much they purchase, when they purchase, and you can really understand and walk each customer through the customer life cycle, no matter how many you have. So that book really was a way for me to speaking at a lot of events. I started writing on Technically Philly and just trying to contribute to the ecosystem, to the entrepreneurship space here locally in Philadelphia, just to get our name out there. So we had our free services, if you were our freemium, and then we try to upgrade them to new services, but also having content that we can introduce and get in front of customers as well. So those are the two ways that we try to bring on new people.
So tell me about a piece of data or a technology that's just emerging that you're going to see is really important to your clients over the next few years. What should we be looking to start tracking?
Give me an industry.
Well, let's say we're here at Benjamin's Desk, which is a co-working space. So let's talk about hospitality, right?
So hospitality is a good one. I think it's definitely something that's being disrupted on a lot of different facets. You look at Airbnb and sort of platform that's come out with them. So what I think is the most important is really going back to, for bigger companies, being able to track each engagement with your customer on a one-to-one basis. It doesn't matter if you have a million customers or 50, the goal should be a 360-degree view. You look at Airbnb, for example, like you have your own platform, you can do ratings, you can have access to other markets and see how often that customer sort of logs in, how often that customer sort of engages with the platform, and that helps you to market different, more effectively to that customer. Gone, I think, is the days of just taking one standard message and blasting that out to everybody. You have to be able to segment your customers based on their objectives, based on their level of engagement with your product, and just do custom messages to them. So not so much as a new technology, but just a return to a new discipline of really trying to get 360-degree view so that you can keep customers in the funnel as long as possible, right? Warren Buffett, the greatest investor, I guess, of our time, he says the key to investing is not to lose money, right? So protect the principal at all costs. And if you just bring that right into the startup world, I think new customer generation is a little overrated. Let's really focus on customer retention. You don't ever want to lose customers by trying to always raise revenue from new customers. You really want to keep the people that you have, keep high levels of engagement. And one of the things that I track internally is when I send a report, I know how many times the actual owner opens that report. That's monumental insight for me, something so small. Because if I'm sending the reports and the accounting is perfect, but he's not opening that report or using that report, or the report has a high bounce rate, he's not using it to make a decision. So I'm really not effectuating and achieving my mission to help him or add value in there.
So you can actually tell if a client has even read the report that you're generated, so that you know when you interact with them next, you know, I know you haven't taken my advice because you haven't read it.
Yeah, I haven't read the report. It's Tableau Online, right? So Tableau Online lets you send a dynamic report and you can actually track the views of the report. That's one of our metrics internally. When we look at our staff at the end of the week, we really look at, okay, who produced the report with the most view? And it can be from any client. If that client shares the report with somebody else in his department, it registers as a view. And I think that if we, the reports that have higher reviews, they call us, we have a seat at the table, they ask us to add some insights into their decision making, and it really solidifies that bond that I'm trying to have with my customers to really add value to help them make decisions. Whereas most accountants, it's like you see them on April 15th, biweekly payroll, and your accounts have reconciled, and that's it. I need to build a business that was a lot more close and dear to the entrepreneur, adding real value. And then you become indispensable in a lot of ways.
So thinking about becoming indispensable at scale, tell me a little bit about the dream for your business. What are we going to see from you over the next 10 years?
The next 10 years, I really want to add a third product. And it's something that I've tried and failed at many times. So if we're doing accounting, we're doing analytics, I want to do content more and better. You know, I've tried to do a blog, but I think the biggest mistake I've made is almost looking at content as just something else you do instead of looking at content as a product. It's something that you have to put as much time, love, and attention into as the accounting. You have to be as diligent with your content and as helpful with your content as we are with the analytics. So I'm really trying to step away from the day-to-day running of the business and really focus on writing, producing content, and really contributing in that phase. I think for me personally, that's my next evolution, is to just communicate the value through data journalism and through just using analytics, using everything that we do on a day-to-day basis. We live in, right now, an open data environment where I can go to Philly Open Data and get just an unbelievable amount of data. And I just want to write about things like civic or social initiatives by just writing about data. And if that comes back and has some commercial benefit for the business, that's a double win for me.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Race Rollins, thanks for joining us today on The Build.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. I appreciate it.
The Build is a production of 2820 Radio in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Our producer is Lori Taylor. Our associate producer is Katie Cohen-Zonizer. Our talent coordinators are Katrina Smith and Gazem Yali. And our post-production team is led by Evan Wilder at Flowly Audio in Detroit. My name is Joe Taylor Jr. Thanks for listening to The Build.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Build. We hope you'll share this series with your friends and provide us with feedback on the iTunes Store. You can also subscribe to weekly updates and learn more about upcoming guests by visiting our show page at thebuild.biz. This has been a 2820 radio production.